Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
And we're back. Thanks again for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. And thank you, all of you who have written to me in recent months. I love receiving your emails. You can send me a message directly. It comes right to me if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. You'll see where the links are, and one of them is to get in contact with me. So when you send me an email that way, it comes directly to me. I read them all. I'm grateful for all of them. I've said that a couple times today already, but I really do mean it, and I'd love to hear from you. So I've got a stack of emails that I'd like to get to, and the first one up for this hour is from Rich, who says, Patrick, my wife and I went to the doctor yesterday after discovering that we had become pregnant with a third child. During the ultrasound, it was discovered that the baby was 11 weeks, but there was no sign of life or heartbeat. We are broken, and I'm looking for Catholic guidance on the three options that were given to us, which were expectant management, medical misoprostol, that's a pill, or surgery DNC. My main focus is the risk to my wife's health at this point while abiding by the teachings of our faith. I want to provide a proper burial for our child, and I've heard the hospitals will give you a hard time about giving you the remains. Any help would be greatly appreciated. All right, Rich, well, my heart goes out to you and your wife. This is a very painful, painful situation, no doubt about it. I know from experience, my wife and I have gone through what you went through, thankfully only once, but I wouldn't wish it on anybody, so I send you my sincere condolences. Now, please note that I am not a physician. I can't give you medical advice. I wouldn't be able to give you medical advice, nor am I an expert on what Catholic hospitals will or won't do when it comes to requesting the remains of a child who dies in utero. But I will offer you a few thoughts that I think will be helpful to you. And why don't we begin, first of all, with the three options that you were given for your wife to be treated. So the three things that you mentioned, expectant management, medical misoprostol, and that pill, and surgery and DNC, all of them, as I understand them, as a non-physician, all of them are designed to make sure that the remains of the baby and any remains of the uterine lining, the placenta, to the extent that there is one there, all of those things that are there now would be removed for the sake of your wife's health. And this is, of course, a very serious issue. So I don't have the medical wherewithal to tell you which of the three I would recommend. So I can't give you any advice in that regard, but I can tell you that as long as you choose whichever one, you and your wife, in consultation with the physician, as long as you choose the one that you prefer, there's nothing inherently immoral about any of them. There's nothing inherently immoral about choosing any of the three. Now, it would be up to the doctors to advise you which is the safest, and you mentioned that you're concerned, and rightfully so, about your wife's health. Understandable. I would feel the same way. So in consultation with the physicians, you'll make a determination which of the three is the safest for your wife, and will achieve the results necessary. But if, as it seems to be, you know, shown, demonstrated, if your unborn child is certainly dead, I'm sorry to have to put it that way, then there's nothing immoral about the means by which you would use, the means by which you would remove the remains. Okay, so that's the first thing. And of course, obviously, we're talking here about a child who has died in the womb. If there were some indication or some idea that perhaps maybe the baby is alive, and that's not the case here, I understand that. But in a situation like that, obviously, one could not undertake to do something that would kill the unborn baby. So this is not that situation. I'm just adding that for the benefit of people who might be listening who are in that situation. So that's what I would suggest. In consultation with the physician, determine which is the one that is going to be the best for your wife, and then do that. Then you ask about a proper burial for the child. Now, I don't know how any given hospital is going to react if you request the remains. There may be some legal issues in play here, and it could be that legally speaking, the hospital is not permitted to release the remains. So that would be an aspect that you'd have to look into. It would be as simple, I think, as querying the hospital, finding out what is their policy on this issue. Now, I'm hopeful that if they're willing to give you the remains, that you'll be able to give a burial to the remains of your child. That's something you would take up with the Catholic cemetery in your area, and you can contact the diocese to get that information. They could put you in touch with the department of the diocese that takes care of the cemeteries. So that would be my suggestion. Now, I mentioned, because I want to be in solidarity with you, I mentioned that my wife and I went through this experience long ago, and it was not quite 20 years ago when our 12th child died in miscarriage. And this child was not quite as far advanced in age as your child. But rather than being at the hospital, my wife had a miscarriage at home. And so that was different in this case, because what we believe to be the remains of the child, which at that early stage, you're not able to really discern a human form, even though it is a human being, obviously. So what we were able to do, working with the local Catholic cemetery, was they have a special place in the cemetery for the burial of bodies of children who die in miscarriage. And I would be surprised if that were not fairly common around the country. So it may well be that the Catholic cemetery near you has a similar area that's set aside for the children who die in miscarriage. So in our case, we contacted our pastor, and because my wife's miscarriage took place at home, we were able to bring the remains of the baby. And again, so early on in the pregnancy that it was not as though, you know, you're looking at a fully developed fetus. But in any case, still a human being, and the remains of a human being. And so our pastor was very kind and thoughtful, and so he went with us and our family. We went to that cemetery, and we had an interment. We had a graveside service where the cemetery took care of that. And there was no charge. I was surprised by that. They did not charge us anything. They accompanied us in our grief, and they made sure that there was a proper burial for the remains of this child. So I only offer that to you only because, having been through it myself, that was something that we found very comforting. And I hope that this is helpful to you. The next question comes in from Araceli. And she has a very different kind of question, also about a child, but a child who's 22 years old. She says, my daughter, who is 22, experiences sleep paralysis. She says she sees dark figures, but she can't see their faces or who they are. She feels scared and she can't move. There have been several times where random women approach her and tell her that she has a bright light and they want to help her close it. She answers by saying no, she is Catholic, and walks away. I tell her that she needs to pray, but she feels that if she does, she will be spiritually attacked. She listens and watches a lot of TikTok, and based on people who have similar sleep paralysis experience, she hears that if they pray, they get spiritually attacked, so she limits her prayers. I don't know how to get through to her. Please help, and thank you for all you do. And this is again from Araceli. All right, Araceli, this seems to me to be multifaceted. Let's first talk about TikTok. TikTok, I have come to believe, is the perhaps the most effective means of suggestion to countless people, especially young people, who are glued to it. So it has the ability to convince people to believe certain things, to disbelieve certain things, to look at the world a certain way, to buy into certain fads. You may remember the crazy fad a while back of young people doing the Tide Pod Challenge. Tide Pods, you know, I think every housewife knows what a Tide Pod is. That little rubbery, you know, squishy packet of soap that you put in the washing machine when you wash your clothes. Well, the insanity of it is that, although it didn't start on TikTok, as I understand it, but still, it's the kind of thing that you'll find on TikTok where kids stupidly saw somebody eating a Tide Pod, and so they started eating Tide Pods. And there was a Tide Pod Challenge, and, you know, people getting challenged to do it. It's just ridiculous. And the more I study TikTok, the more I consider it in light of some of the insanity that is connected to it, the more I think that this may well be, it's possible, I'm not saying it is because I don't know, but it's possible that what your daughter's experience is simply the suggestion in her mind of what she's seeing on TikTok. And people on TikTok who are yammering on about their experiences, they may be correct. I mean, it may be some supernatural or preternatural interference, could be demonic activity. That's always a possibility. But it's also possible that it's not. And so with regard to your own daughter's experience, regardless of whatever may be happening to the people on TikTok, her situation might not be diabolical in nature. It might simply be that she's absorbing these videos and this auto-suggestion is working on her in some hypnotic way, some subliminal way, and maybe she thinks that she's experiencing this because she's seen other people talk about it. So I offer that to you for your consideration. It's possible that that's all this is. Now, it's also possible that there is something to it, and that, in fact, your daughter is experiencing some type of nefarious diabolical activity. That happens too, and it probably happens far more often than we give attention to. But the thing that you mentioned here, saying that she sees dark figures and she can't see their faces, I have a friend who is a licensed psychologist and therapist. And he and I, some years ago, we had a conversation about his clients who are young people, so teenagers, maybe even a bit younger than that too, and those who are young adults. And something he said was very striking in that, and I thought about that when I read your letter the first time. And he says that a very common theme that some of these young people express, who don't know each other, they don't have any idea about what the other person said, but a very consistent and common theme is seeing a dark figure either in the corner of the room or lurking in a shadow, or they turn because they can see something. And just as they turn, they see a dark figure there, and then they can't see it. Things like that. So this friend of mine who has the credentials and the experience and the training to be able to evaluate such things, he says that that phenomenon is rather common. Now, he also says that in those situations where he's giving counseling to these young people, he has come to the conclusion that there is a fair number of situations in which there is some kind of diabolical activity. Now, he's a layman, so he doesn't have the credentials of an exorcist. That would be a priest appointed by the bishop. But he has enough experience with it, and he's even referred some of these situations to an exorcist, that it seems to me that this indicates that that could be part, that could be what's going on here. So since this is happening, my advice would be this for your daughter. Number one, because she feels hesitant about praying, and that, by the way, is a lie of the devil. You can point that out to her. Jesus himself said many times, he said, the devil is a liar and the father of lies. So naturally, if he can persuade people to not pray, especially if he, you know, if he can induce them to not pray because they don't want to be attacked, then he gets what he wants, which is to keep people away from God. So point that out. The devil is a liar. He's the father of lies. He's a murderer, as Jesus says. And so she should ignore that idea, because by not praying, she's not tapping into that heavenly power that is by far infinitely more powerful than any of the devil's tricks. And the devil would prefer her not to pray. So that's what she should do. She should be praying for deliverance. She should be praying for relief. If there's anything going on in her life, and I think the TikTok absorption is one of those things, if you had to choose, there may be other things. I don't know if she's involved in any occult activity, if she's gone to a fortune teller. Ask her these questions. Have you gone to a fortune teller? Have you been playing with tarot cards or going to people who presume to tell your future? Mediums, seances, Ouija boards, things of that nature. Have you been involved in anything like that? And even if it's been a while, if the devil gets a foothold, he will struggle mightily to maintain it. So ask her also, do you have anything in your room where you live? I don't know if she lives with you or not, but I mean, is there anything in your room that is related to the occult? Did somebody give you an amulet? Did you get a strange poster or a sticker with a weird face on it or a little statue or figurine or something? Did you bring tarot cards into your room? These are all questions that you should ask her. And the reason is because very often it's when there is something like that introduced into your home, the devil will follow. And diabolical phenomena can follow. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be just a physical thing, like a charm or an amulet or something like that. It could also take the form of if somebody is engaging in sinful activity, pornography as one example, very common example. And I'm not suggesting that your daughter's involved in pornography. I'm just saying it's a possibility and it's worth asking her about because, let's face it, if you're alone in your room or your office or wherever you are and the door's closed and there's nobody there and you're looking at pornography, you in essence have set up a kind of shrine to the devil and you've created a space for him to be able to be there because he loves that. He wants that. He wants people to get entangled however possible. So it could be tarot cards, could be occult activity, could be pornography, it could be a number of things. So I'm not suggesting that you hound her, but it would be worth your while to ask her. You know, I love you, and all I want is your happiness. And I've been given some advice that indicates that maybe there's something perhaps you brought into the house with you that could be part of this problem, and I'm here to help you, okay? So I would do that. I would pray with your daughter and encourage her strongly to pray. Pray prayers of deliverance. Pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet together. Ask her to pray it with you. Remind her that greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. So the power of Jesus Christ will utterly defeat the power of the evil one every single time. But you have to ask for it. And by you, I'm referring to your daughter. She needs to be close to Jesus. So if there's anything in her life, it could be a lifestyle choice. It could be lack of prayer. It could be any number of things. So encourage her to get close to the Lord again, especially in the sacraments. If she hasn't been to confession in a while, or even a long while, encourage her to go to confession. Encourage her to receive Holy Communion. Encourage her to pray the rosary. Encourage her to pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet. In other words, to surround herself with that spiritual armor that the devil and his minions simply can't get through. Then, lastly, what I would recommend is, and I suppose this is especially true if she's living in your home, would be to invite the parish priest to come to your home. Maybe you could feed him a nice dinner and ask him to bless every room in your house. And he will do so. He'll pray prayers of deliverance and he'll walk through every room of your home, especially spend some time in her bedroom. If this is where these phenomena are taking place, then spend some time there. Have him bless the room with holy water. Pray prayers of deliverance. These are all time-tested, proven ways to drive the devil away. I would also, lastly, enthrone the images of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary in your home, and perhaps even in her room. If this is where this activity is taking place, enthrone the images of Jesus and Mary in her room, and that puts the devil on notice that you're not welcome here. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, as it says in the book of Joshua. So she could adopt the same warfare tactics, you know, go to war. This is spiritual warfare, and she should go on the attack and bring to bear all those spiritual weapons that the church has at her disposal that your daughter is more than welcome to take advantage of and to make use of. So these are all things that I would do. And then after some of this has been done, if this does happen, I pray that it will, then maybe after a few weeks or a month, I suspect that this will begin to subside. It may go away very quickly. And the situation that she has may be something in the past. Now, lastly, and I guess this is the last thing I would say, is I would really try as hard as you can to reason with her to stop looking at TikTok. It's just bad for you. It's like putting junk in your body. It's like eating junk food that's got toxins in it. And some people say, oh, come on, there's nothing wrong with TikTok. It's just innocent. It's not innocent. And what I would encourage you and your daughter to do is maybe go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and just do a keyword search in the search bar for TikTok. And all the shows in which I discuss that, and there have been several in the last year or so, we get into all kinds of specifics about it and strange things that are going on. And maybe if you play those segments for your daughter, she'll get the point and she'll wean herself off of TikTok. I sure wish TikTok didn't exist based upon what the horror stories that I'm hearing. So those are my bits of advice. I hope that's helpful to you. I'm really glad you took the time to write to me, and I look forward to hearing some good news when you get back in touch. All right, time out for a quick break. We'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. As I mentioned, I'm spending some time reading some emails. I also want to talk a little bit, as time permits, about the experience that one mom had with her husband when it came to their daughter thinking that she might be transgender and all the gender confusion that went on. I'm going to share with you a first-person account of what happened in that situation. I'll be right back with more right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Good evening. This is Tom Brokaw, NBC Nightly News. The internet has collapsed. National security officials are now blaming it on the high volume of emails being sent to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. We'll have more tonight on the NBC Nightly News.
You've got mail.
Mail time.
Mail time.
It's mail time? Already? Really? Okay, we'll be right there, mailbox.
Got a box full of letters.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
Some things that you might like to see, but they're all addressed.
Well, this hour goes by very quickly. It's the last hour of the day today. Thanks again for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. I'm spending a lot of time on emails. This one comes in from Sylvia, and Sylvia is involved with Project Rachel. And if you're familiar with Project Rachel, she's involved with a chapter down in Florida. And so she's responding to something she heard on my program a while back, and she's in particular referring to a phone call that came in from a gentleman named Raul about his wife wanting a divorce after they're having 4 miscarriages in a row. So that's just a tough situation. If you want to go back and listen to that phone call, you can by doing a keyword search at the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. But she's responding to that she heard a while back. She says, I just heard Raul's heartbreaking call about how his wife wants a divorce after having 4 miscarriages in a row. Having worked for over 30 years helping women deal with pregnancy loss, mostly through procured abortion, I can venture to guess that Raul's wife most likely has deep dark issues, which she has probably avoided dealing with, as she's probably in denial. These issues could be past trauma due to abortions and or sexual, emotional, or physical abuse. Decades ago, she says, I knew a seemingly ideal Catholic couple with a large family. The husband later told me that when first getting to know his wife, she had told him about 3 abortions she had years earlier. His Catholic therapist told him that since she hadn't really dealt with all the issues surrounding these abortions, it was only a matter of time before she aborted him, in other words, their relationship. She says, I have witnessed similar scenarios repeatedly. However, most of the married women whom I helped through Project Rachel have never told their husband about past abortions. The shame is too great, and they fear being judged and not accepted if the truth were revealed. If the husband expresses thoughts about abortion being wrong, such as, I don't know how any woman could have an abortion, his wife would feel even worse about herself, or she might start resenting and even hating her husband. She may no longer tolerate being around him, as she feels judged or condemned. And if she chooses divorce, the husband is often dumbfounded as to why. In the USA, about 1 out of 4 women has an abortion by the age of 45. Let me repeat that. In the USA, about 1 out of 4 women has an abortion by the age of 45. Our society is badly crippled. There is a new interfaith initiative founded and sponsored by a devout and wealthy Catholic lady down in Florida, and with full approval of the bishop, this organization is working hard to bridge the gap, offering free healing programs as well as education for the community at large so we can break through the stigma of abortion and talk about it openly and compassionately so as to reach the throngs of wounded souls. She talks about an event that they're having online, and although I typically don't give out website addresses, I will give this one out because I think it's a fine resource, and it is supportafterabortion.com. Supportafterabortion.com. And Sylvia finishes by saying, thank you for all you do. I love your show, and I recommend it widely, with prayers. So that is so appreciated, Sylvia. I really do appreciate that. And your insights, I think, are particularly timely, especially what you mentioned about how the husband feels dumbfounded that this loving wife of his, with whom he's building a life together, they're having children together, maybe even many children together, and it could be that hidden submerged iceberg of, as you point out, an abortion or more than one abortion in the past that she never properly dealt with. And I could just imagine how blindsided the husband might feel about that, as well as the statistic that you shared. I've heard it before, but every time I see it, it just stops me in my tracks. 1 out of 4 women will have had an abortion by the age of 45. And the devastating effects that that has, not merely on, you know, and I don't mean merely as in to diminish its importance, but, you know, not just on marriages and certainly not just on the people themselves, but also on our whole society. When you've got that many people, imagine 25, perhaps more, 30% perhaps, of the population walking wounded, who are shell-shocked and don't even necessarily know how to go about healing. Many of them do not know how to go about healing. They don't even know necessarily that healing is available to them. So I'm glad you raised that issue. And it's one of those things that, you know, this side of eternity probably will never go away entirely. So we have to do the best we can to show compassion and love for these women, for the husbands, for the families. Many times it's just a mystery to them why these things are happening. And your work and your insights and your email are much appreciated. Thank you for that. Well, let's see. I want to transition now into a related topic that has to do with loneliness among women. And there are two interesting things I want to share with you. One is an article in AARP, and it has to do with loneliness and social connections among adults ages 45 and older. But it also ties into another article, and this appeared recently in the Wall Street Journal, about mothers in middle age. In fact, the title is Moms in Middle Age, Rarely Alone, Often Online, and Increasingly Lonely. And I'd like to start with that because I just read the email a moment ago from the lady who works with Project Rachel. And as you heard, she's drawing out some of these implications of the wounds that exist that are sometimes, maybe for a whole lifetime, never properly addressed, the wounds of abortion. And I couldn't help but wonder to what extent might that have something to do with what's being described in this article as a loneliness epidemic. People who just feel alone, even if they're surrounded by people. Here's that article from the Wall Street Journal. Middle age is a crowded time. it's also a lonely one. Work and family demands leave, little time for nurturing friendships, particularly for women. Pre-pandemic conversations about loneliness often centered on men, with the talk of a loneliness epidemic. But during the lockdowns, Generation X women, who range in age from 41 to 57 years of age, reported the sharpest rise in loneliness, according to a survey of more than 1,000 adults conducted in the spring of 2020 by the Roots of Loneliness Project, which is a research organization. They looked at the increase in social isolation being reported by women living with children, and also it is greatest among those from the Generation X, or Gen X. So you have the baby boom, which ended in 1964. So 1965 and on would be the beginning of Gen X. And that age range again would be 41 to 57, as I speak today. For women feeling burned out from holding family life and work together, social media has typically been the most convenient place to vent and seek connection. But going online has surfaced feelings of inadequacy and loneliness, many say. For example, Miranda Reinhart, a 38-year-old photographer in Pueblo, Colorado, with children ages 11 to 20, she says she hasn't found her mom tribe. She said she's never really fit in with her kids' friends' mothers because she's been either the youngest parent in the group or the oldest. The fact that she homeschools her kids because her husband traveled frequently when they were young has made it tougher for her to find friends with similar interests and stances. She said she doesn't feel she fits in with the other homeschooling mothers in her area because she said she feels their views are more conservative than hers. It feels strange to me, she says, to think about feeling lonely because I'm never alone. There's always someone around, but I feel like I'm missing that connection with moms who are going through similar things. She has a close friend who has a six-year-old and another child about to turn three, watching the TV show This Is Us together before the pandemic, but as work and life became busier for both, they stopped figuring they would pick it up again later, but they haven't. Where is the time? Where is the energy? She said. COVID has added so much more to the mental load for moms, which was high already, and at the end of the day, we're just worn out. She says her Facebook feed helps her maintain connections with old friends, but it also leaves her with mixed emotions. It's a link, she says, to people you haven't talked to in ages. I can see their lives, but I'm not part of them. Social media has made me feel less isolated, but more lonely. Think about that for a minute. Social media has made me feel less isolated, but more lonely. She says she's tried Facebook groups to find moms in similar life stages, but because she hasn't found a group of in-person friends, she sometimes feels that she's left on the sidelines. When she sees posts of women getting together for a girls' night out or going on a trip, she says, I want that. And sometimes I stop and ask myself, what did I do wrong? Social media can make it feel like everyone has a friend group. Some days I feel like I'm a teenager again, wondering, why can't I find a group that I like and that I can fit into? Am I not funny enough? Am I too introverted? She says, the author of the article says, when I posted a question about middle-aged loneliness in a large Facebook parenting group, I immediately heard from more than 300 women, most of whom expressed similar feelings. And by the way, the author of the article is a woman. Another person she mentions, Deb, a 55-year-old divorced mother of two, became an empty nester last summer after her youngest daughter graduated from college. Getting time with married friends was always tricky, but Deb is an accountant in Connecticut, and so she made an effort to organize gatherings where she could find someone to have dinner with or go on a walk with at night. She says, I was out volunteering and meeting people, and then the pandemic shut all that down. Everyone has been in their own bubbles. Working remotely has made life even lonelier, she says. Instead of dinners and walks, she said Facebook is now what keeps her in contact, and that has been a mixed blessing. Now, I mentioned this AARP survey, and hopefully there'll be some time I could talk to you a little bit about that. We'll see if time permits. But the survey found that people 45 and older find that middle age and as well as older age, these are the adults who were surveyed, they feel more lonely as they increase their use of social media. Kind of an inverse proportion, right? So you figure the more you get on Facebook, the more connected you would be. But people in this age cohort are saying that the more they get on social media, the more lonely they feel, the more disconnected they feel. A study of adults in Italy conducted during the COVID-19 lockdowns found that social media is no substitute for in-person social interactions. That seems like it's self-evidently obvious, and it took a pandemic to reveal that to some people. Deb, aforementioned, has been cautious about socializing due to health issues and because she doesn't want to risk infecting her granddaughter, who was born, she was born a little over a year ago. Friends became so used to her declining invitations that they didn't always think to ask her out. I mean, let me repeat that. Friends who got so used to her declining their invitations, they just basically stopped asking her. And then when they would post pictures about their dinners and other gatherings on Facebook, where was she? She was on Facebook watching it. She felt more lonely. There's a big fear of missing out, she says. I've seen photos of friends at the beach, and I think they were outside. I could have gone. And here's the conclusion. Andy, a 52-year-old mother of two college kids, spends most of her time assisting her 84-year-old mother in taking her to doctor's appointments. She moved to Georgia from Texas 5 years ago, for her husband's job hasn't forged deep connections like the ones that she had before relocating. She says, by the time your kids are in high school, most women have their own little group of parent friends. She said that she appreciated being able to connect on social media with far-flung friends and relatives during the lockdown phase of the pandemic, but she felt that the connections were superficial. She says, I like knowing what they're doing, but it doesn't solve my loneliness problem. I'll read that again. I like knowing what they're doing, but it doesn't solve my loneliness problem. So by all accounts, we have to take a break in a minute. By all accounts, this is a problem that is, I would guess, probably fairly equally distributed among men and women, or between men and women. How do you cope with that kind of loneliness? What are some ways that you can deal with this emotion of loneliness? Thankfully, emotions are like the weather. They tend to come and go. They tend to be intense for a while, like a storm, and then it blows over. But not always. Sometimes these things can linger for an awfully long time, kind of like winter in Ohio, where it's gray for months on end. It's a paradise the rest of the year, but for a couple, two, 3 months in the middle of winter, all you see is gray, and that can be very wearying. And I think by way of an analogy, that seems to be what many people are experiencing. So naturally, you know that I'm going to say that ultimately you will find your true happiness, your true sense of belonging only in God. And I know that for some people, it's like, okay, yeah, that's a nice formula, but how do I actually get to the point where I can feel that way emotionally? How do I actually come to that realization that my true identity will be found in my relationship with God, because He created me after all? Well, I'd say take a cue from the saints. And that would be my final thought as I ponder what this article has to share with us. Take a cue from the saints and recognize that for them, it was a matter of daily chipping away at it in the form, first of all, of prayer, communication with God, being in conversation with God, raising your voice to God. Lord, you know how I feel right now. You know better than I do what I'm going through right now. And I need your help. I need friends. I need a purpose. And this is where the second bit of advice comes in, not from something that I myself have mastered, but I've heard about this and seen it in the lives of the people who are holy, and that is they serve other people. They're busy, not for the sake of it, but they're busy. They're attentive. That might be a better word than busy. They're attentive to the needs of other people. Their radar is up. They are not only looking for opportunities to be of service, however they can, but when opportunities arise, they take action. So yes, I could understand entirely if you said, well, I'm already doing that with my kids. I'm already chained to my day-to-day routine as a mom. I've got to take care of my kids. I understand it. But there may be other ways that you can serve and serve other people too that don't require you to change your routine. So I don't broach this topic with you for the sake of saying, okay, now here's how to fix the problem, because if I had those answers, I would write a book and I'd become an instant zillionaire. And I don't think anybody truly has all those answers with the exception of Jesus himself. You know, Jesus himself said, you know, come to me, those of you who are weary and heavily burdened. He says, for my burden is light and my yoke is easy. And if you come to me, I will help you carry your burdens. So think about that, especially if this article touched a nerve for you, if you saw your own self maybe being described in some of those things. Think about that and then ask Jesus to help you. And what I mean by that is remind him, Lord, you said to me to come to you if I'm heavily burdened and if I'm weary. I'm coming to you now. You said that your burden is light and your yoke is easy. The yoke that goes over the shoulders of an ox who's in the harness pulling. The burden is light and the yoke is easy. So Lord, please make good on that promise. I love you, I trust you, and I really need you right now. That would be my advice. Start there and ask the Lord, and he will answer you. I'm going to take a break, and I'll be right back with more. In fact, we'll be right back with the rest of this last hour of the program today, right after this.
This is for all lonely people, thinking that life has passed them by. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup.
I like to call purgatory the mudroom of heaven.
The Cale Clark Show.
Knock off the crud from the outdoors before we can come in. Steve is calling from Minneapolis.
First of all, let me just say I really appreciate this show. And I grew up Protestant, but I tell you, I'm really warming up to Catholicism. Can you explain to me in a nutshell this concept of purgatory?
Thank you for your very kind words. And let me try to answer your question about purgatory. I'll tell you what the Catechism says about it. It says, all who die in God's grace and friendship, but still imperfectly purified, are indeed assured of their eternal salvation. But after death, they undergo purification so as to achieve the holiness necessary to enter the joy of heaven.
There's a lot that I'm rethinking, and I'm not sure where I'm going to land on it, but I do appreciate your prayers.
The Cale Clark Show, afternoons at 5 Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Why don't they do what they say?
Okay, this is the end of this last hour of the program today, and boy, do we cover a lot of ground when it comes to emails and things. I want to shift gears now and talk about a true story told by a lady named Charlie Jacobs. I presume her maybe that's short for Charlotte or something, but it's appeared in the Daily Signal under the heading, "As I found out with my daughter, not even Catholic schools are safe havens from gender ideology." And I'm just going to share with you, as time permits, what she had to say. She said, "My husband and I looked into a Catholic school to be an ally in our fight to break our daughter free from the grip of gender confusion. We were naive. Our daughter, now 15, was 13 when she was coached into believing that she was born in the wrong body and could change to the opposite sex. This led her to self-loathing. But instead of finding a partner within the Catholic Church, we discovered that our local Catholic high school had adopted procedures that promote transgenderism. This situation has left us with no place to educate our child and a profound feeling of disappointment and abandonment." She says, "As I previously wrote, our daughter's transgender identity came with little warning. She started ninth grade at a public charter high school, but due to COVID, didn't actually set foot in a classroom. During the first week of online classes, I noticed that all her teachers were referring to her by male pronouns and a male name. My husband and I were stunned. We later learned that our daughter, who had been happy as a stereotypical girl until puberty, had come out to her school as trans. When I contacted the charter school, her designated counselor cheerfully informed me that the school permits children to lead, LEAD, and self-identify concerning gender without consulting their parents. The school's basis for this clandestine social transition was to ensure the safety, quote-unquote, of the child. By extension, the policy must have assumed that all parents are, quote-unquote, unsafe, because a police officer and a child protective services worker soon appeared at our door to ask questions and look around. We were angered that no one at the school saw fit to clue in the child's parents on the situation. Moreover, the teachers blatantly hid the name change by sending me emails using our daughter's given name, thus triangulating the relationship among teacher, child, and parents. From discussions with our daughter and a deep dive into her internet use, we came to learn that she was being brainwashed by others into thinking she was male. She was in contact with older trans kids, so-called glitter families, adult males, and internet influencers. They directed our daughter to dangerous sexually explicit websites. They instructed her that if she didn't like her body, she was trans. They taught her how to bind her breasts and dissociate from her body. We, too, saw that she was consumed with anime and manga, which don't simply feature innocuous doe-eyed comic book characters, but include gender-bending, highly sexualized creatures that can disrupt reality in a young brain. Our daughter clearly had been groomed for her new identity. We quickly engaged a mental health professional. She warned us that if we did not use the preferred male name and pronouns for our daughter, she would likely commit suicide. This therapist told us to celebrate our daughter's new authentic self and tell her how brave she was. She told us that our memories were wrong. She told us that our daughter's prior stereotypical girlish behavior was just a false facade for her authentic self. We soon realized that the therapist's recommendations were wrong and contrary to science. We read everything on the subject, conferred with other professionals, and met with parent groups. We learned that social transition, which begins with a name and pronoun change, is part of medical treatment and the initial step toward irreversible and sterility-causing cross-sex hormones and even removal of parts of the body. This avenue was not in our daughter's best interests. We transferred her to a local Catholic school later that fall, believing that the school would be a partner in helping our child come to love herself. Based on the first therapist's advice, we initially asked the school to use our daughter's male name as we worked on reversing her social transition. We retained another mental health expert who advised that the first step in helping our daughter find her way back to reality was to carefully backtrack from the name change. The process needed to be completed slowly, carefully, and with compassion. Our daughter's mental state was fragile. Her delusion wreaked havoc on her ability to function. She barely had the energy to shower, brush her teeth, and get out of bed for Zoom school. The reversal of her social transition began with our ceasing to use the male pronouns and name at home. We started by using a nickname, then no name. We then added her female name here or there. Finally, in March of her freshman year, we returned to consistent use of her female name and pronouns. We looked to our Catholic school to support us in this endeavor. Instead, we found out that the school was directly pushing transgender ideology through one of its inclusion clubs called the Pride Student Union. The spring welcome email from the Pride Student Union relayed all of the student officers' preferred pronouns and included an announcement by the club president, a biological female, that she was queer. Queer is a term that has expanded in youth circles to refer to those who believe all sexual norms should be obliterated. This email explicitly stated that the club's formal meetings are teaching meetings. The most recent such teaching meeting, it was said, was about Black history and queerness. The trans movement clearly has acted on advice to link its message to the more popular civil rights movement. The listed activities of the Pride Student Union included a formal meeting about gender identity. At the end of March, the club president sent out this message: "Happy Trans Day of Visibility for everyone who identified as transgender. I sincerely hope this day and all those around you empower you. This is your day," in caps. The club president's email included links to GLAD and GLSEN, overtly trans activist groups that recommend ways for children to reject their families if these relatives don't support them, that is, if they don't affirm their trans identity and medicalize them with puberty blockers and so on. These groups also instruct kids how to get medicalized readily and how to force teachers and parents to accommodate their identity choices without any recommendation that they first pursue exploratory therapy. Now, I'm going to deviate from the article here for a moment. She's describing what is going on in countless schools all around the country. And her point is that in some cases, not all, thankfully, but in some cases, this poison has actually invaded some Catholic schools as well. Now, the balance of the article, which I don't have time to read to you because we have to wrap things up here in a minute, the balance of the article gets into First of all, the meeting that they had with the principal at their daughter's Catholic school. So they said, all right, we need to have a meeting. And they explain, she explains in this, what actually happened. She talks about the social contagion among students and how this ideology that's being promoted in school actually spreads. It is contagious. And she explains how it spreads. If you've wondered what happened to my son or daughter, they went off to high school and now I'm being told that he or she wants to be the opposite sex. How did this happen? We raised them in a good home. We said the family rosary. They were homeschooled. How did this happen? Well, this article explains it. And it also gives the ways in which those who are trying to help children come out of the situation, what they warn about. And she gives a number of resources that were helpful to them. It's well worth your time to read this article. It's very eye-opening, and I dare say it's probably a roadmap for the kind of situations that other people, perhaps in your own family, have been going through. So Cyrus will get that posted on the show Twitter feed, and you'll be able to check it out there. That's relevantradio.com/Patrick if you want to see it on the show page. As for me, right now, we've got to sort of tie things up because we've reached the end of the road. So once again, thank you for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show again today. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. And until then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.